You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
You're listening to the Cricket Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Cricket Podcast, where we're going to be talking about Qualifier 1 from the 2022 IPL, as the Gujarat Titans took on and beat the Rajasthan Royals. The match, it went with the table. Titans taking down royalty, which apparently is a thing from Greek mythology. Apparently royalty is terrified, or are terrified, of the Titans. That's what I've heard from Sudeep in the Discord. Early plug for the Patreon. I am Jack Hope. I'm joined on my top right, if you're on YouTube, by Max Rowe Brown. How are you doing, Max Rowe Brown?
Hello. Yeah, very well. Nice to see the playoffs underway. It was a good game to get started. Took it down to the last over, so you can't ask for too much more than that, can you?
And in my top left, or I don't know where you come out of in terms of people's ears, if they're on their commute tomorrow morning, Dan. But Dan Weston, how are you doing, Dan Weston?
Yeah, I am all good. Yeah, enjoyed a nice relaxing break last week, which is just as well, because back into carnage of T20 Blast preparation now, with game on Thursday, Saturday and Sunday this week. So yeah, not like the IPL, which will spread out over a few days. No, last week we get three games in 4 days.
Wow, that's pretty intense. I'm off to Sicily tomorrow, so this is my last.
I was there last week.
Oh, were you? Yeah. Any tips?
Yeah, I didn't get off the boat.
Oh. So, which go, Catania or Palermo?
Maybe I've got the island wrong, I think.
Yeah. were you in Sardinia?
Yeah. It was in Naples. Okay. My Italian geography is really not great.
Naples is the main bit.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, you're in Italy. That's the main thing, isn't it?
Indeed.
Where AC Milan have just been crowned champions. That was a good title race. Max, we're going to do messages for the listeners, then we're going to talk about the cricket, and we might at the end of the show talk a little bit about tomorrow's game, and we've got some questions, so we've got a lot on the agenda, but the messages is what we do first. Go.
Okay, well, if you are currently in the chat, please like this video, and please subscribe to the Cricket Podcast if you're not already. Subscribe, hit the bell icon, keep up with all our shows. We've got a show after each game, each of the knockout games, so yeah, keep in touch. Go over to Twitter and Instagram at the Cricket Pod to follow us there. And we are sponsored by Sirius Cricket. So seriouscricket.co.uk with the code TCP22 for 10% off all of your cricket equipment. It's good. The season started. You may have accidentally broken a pad, or you might have got clocked in the head by a fast, vicious bouncer and need a new helmet. So go over there and get a new one. That's what we're offering you. 10%. Use it.
Do you know
and
what?
Finally, yes.
I was going to say, two people in my game on Saturday got hit in the head. So
did they?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Was it a quick ball?
No, it was a terrible pitch.
Beamer.
Yeah.
No, I'm beamed. It was like off a length into the grill, that type
oh,
of
thing. Oh, shit, yeah.
And then I went out, I batted in a helmet for the first time in 3 years, and it was so difficult.
That's how bad it was.
It was so difficult that I took the helmet off and was just like, if I get hit in the head, I'm going to get hit in the head. I couldn't see the ball. Anyway, little diversionary okay. story there. What was it? What? I got 47 not out then, yeah.
Worth it.
About 30.
Oh, decent.
MS Hopi, I took the team home.
Yeah. But it
Ross didn't play. He was Ross is playing now, which we've had some people in the chat saying Ross, the Rajasthan Royals fan, not here. He's playing now. They're chasing 117 in 16 overs, which is
in pouring rain.
Carry on, Max.
The final thing is patreon.com/thecricketpod. As you mentioned, the Discord. You can join the Discord with supporting the podcast through the Patreon from as little as £4 a month. Other things include IPL data, exclusive shows, which we said we're due two of those. So it's a good time to join to get double bonus.
Yes.
All good stuff.
We will. When we're back from Sicily, we've got actual Patreon stuff to make instead of 7,000 IPL shows a week or whatever it feels like. We're going to start with a super chat and get them in if you like. It always helps if you want to support the show that way or via Patreon, as Max just said. Jitter says, Prasith, seriously, WTF, bro. You for real, ? Dan, I think in games like this, sometimes it is best to talk about the end because then you get the emotion out the way a little bit and you can do the analysis and go back through the match. And, you know, we're going to talk about Butler. We're going to talk about Hardik. We might even talk... we're definitely going to talk Killer Miller. I was going to say we might talk Killer Miller. We're going to start with Killer Miller, basically. Prasith Krishna, though, at the death. Well, off air, we were talking about how he might not have been the best choice to bowl the 20th over. But Rajasthan, like, what are their options?
Well, that's the thing in that Bolt's not a death bowler. Prasith Krishna, I think, is unlikely to be a positive expectation death bowler in the long term. So I think that by and large, I've got a question about this on Twitter as well, so it's kind of relevant to tie this in at the same time. They've got away with these five bowlers, like a sort of what would be like a 6-5 split, if you like. And I'm not sure it's a viable long-term strategy. We'll see. I know we spoke a bit about Prasith Krishna's speeds that he bowls, and he doesn't really have a lot of deviation in the speeds that he bowls, which is not ideal if you're a batter and you've done a bit of homework, you know what you're going to get. So obviously, I'm presuming that Miller might have been aware of that. And
seemed like it. Prasith Krishna basically never bowls a ball. Well, he does occasionally, but like sort of less than 5% of his deliveries are slower balls, which isn't, you know, ideal if you're bowling against Hardik Pandya and Killer Miller at the death when they need 16 off six balls, because they're going to be trying to clear the fences and they know that you're not really going to do anything weird. Max, you were doing the comms on this game, weren't you? It must have been quite a thrilling moment to get through. Were your emotions up and down? Were you thinking about Ross? Did you feel sorry for Prasith Krishna? Tell us about it.
It was a weird one because we were sort of sitting monitoring how the game was going, and it felt from pretty much the halfway stage of Gujarat's innings that they were comfortable. And even, you know, to the point where they were looking at chasing to a ball for the last few overs, I still weirdly felt that they were comfortable. I don't know if we were being lulled into a full sense of security by the fact that Hardik, Pandya and David Miller were content just to milk singles for about six overs, which was slightly odd. But it was only when they needed 16 off the last over that you thought, oh, hang on a minute, they might actually not win this. David Miller was like, nah, I got this. And it was really impressive from him. But yeah, he did put away some reasonably simple bowling to put away at the end, wasn't it? Sort of full deliveries in the hitting arc for a man who had been in for a good portion and was batting nicely. And I thought it was really overall really solid performance from Gujarat. It didn't feel like there was jeopardy in there for me. That was my overarching emotion of the chase.
The match kind of went with the theme of the tournament for Gujarat, really, in that they've I mean, I personally don't think this is a sustainable approach whatsoever, but fair play to them, they're doing it right now. And that is that they're basically nailing every single clutch moment. And like you said, sort of 16 last over, it still kind of felt like it was never really in that much doubt. And if you said to me, right, okay, you got to play 100-game group stage, would Gujarat be in the top four? I'd probably say no.
Still say no. But,
yeah, 100%. But they've just nailed it. Every marginal fine variance, fine margin spot that they're in, they've just smashed it.
So I think I'd be... I think I'd be a little bit more credible to them. So they've had a couple of pretty freakish ones, like let's not mention Tuatia on this podcast. But I think one of the other things they've been quite good at through the tournament is, especially with the bat, is manipulating themselves into positions where they have a player who has an advantage against the opposition player who has to deliver. And sort of last over, we saw that, Max, you talked about how there was sort of, if didn't really feel like there was all that much danger. Well, yeah, because Prasidh Krishna has ended up having to bowl to two set batters who are really, really good against pace, with a reserve batter who's also really, really good against pace sitting on the bench. I feel like sometimes when we talk about matchups and analysis, we can focus on what the fielding captain's doing, and sometimes perhaps we miss how clever batters are being in terms of when they choose their moments. And now I'd agree with you, Dan. I think that the Gujarat definitely had a little bit of luck here and there, but they've still won 11 out of 15 matches now. And I'd still say, and I'd probably have them. And I think you can go back and listen to the original podcast we did on when Ross and I went through the whole table and ranked who we thought would finish where. I'm pretty sure we had Gujarat down as our 10th best team. Now some things have come good for them, obviously, since then. Killer Miller has reverted. You know, he's time traveled 5 years back in time, and is good again now. Tuatia, who, let's be, if we're being generous, had been patchy in the IPL, some very good patches, but also some pretty barren times for him. So he's been like immense most of the year, and Hardik Pandya has been fit all season, which was another huge question mark. So they've had a little bit of luck there, and some people have definitely performed above expectations, but having seen what they've done and how they've been able to manipulate those situations, I think they're actually due a little bit more credit than I think maybe you're giving them there. I think you're still not convinced. I mean, that's fair enough, Max.
Yeah, I think they're a Rashid Khan injury away from really struggling next year.
Well, I mean, he's not somebody who goes down. It's not like Sunrisers, who went in with like four players who break down all the time, and then they were like, "Oh no, they've broken down. What do we do now?" And then they lost. If you're relying on Rashid Khan, he's a guy who pretty solidly plays 14 matches a season.
No, for sure. No, absolutely. But you know, just hypothetically speaking, you know, he's so good, and ultimately, I'm not really sold on. I mean, yeah, they didn't play Ferguson today, but a non-Ferguson pace attacker doesn't. Their non-Ferguson pace attack doesn't fill me with any confidence.
No, I think that's. I probably agree with that. I don't think they're the perfect team by any stretcher, but I do think that they have some things that other teams have just not really been able to deal with, like an explosive lower order. There's quite a few teams rolling around in this tournament without any death bowling. They have been able to exploit that weakness in the playing field.
It's such a scarce resource, so ten teams are never going to be able to all have two good death bowlers.
And it's worked out for them. I mean, so you've got three, four pretty good death hitters. Like Hardik, if he's there, is good. Miller, if he's there, is good. Tuatia, is pretty good. And Rashid Khan has done the business this year. Like I think they're strong in an area where almost every other team is or in an area that other almost every other team is going to struggle to deal with. Max, where do you sit on the Gujarat good bad continuum?
I've been really impressed with them. I've been surprised at how good they've been. I wasn't, certainly didn't have them down as contenders to, well, top the group and certainly make it to the final with the ease with which they have. I think what we did say before the tournament was that whether or not Hardik Pandya was able to bowl and was fully fit would be a massive thing for them. And, you know, that's without, you know, having set the tournament alight with the ball or anything like that. He's been pretty good with the bat and he's offered some important overs, and it just gives them the flexibility to be able to use different options with the ball that a team, for example, like Rajasthan Royals don't have because of what you said with the 6 and 5 split. Their batting ends a bit early and they have to use the 5 bowlers they've got. So you end up with a situation like we had today where Ravi Ashwin was not firing at all and ends up going for 40, which is quite unlike him. And Prashant Krishna has to try and bowl the last over. So the having a full Hardik Pandya is a definite bonus for obvious reasons. And that's helped them make them a more competitive team. But you look at it on paper and you still don't think it should be that good. I mean, the Ruben Saha, decent, not, you know, mind-blowingly good. And, you know, was he 35, 36 now? Shubman Gill in T20, I'm still not convinced by. He was decent today. I had a couple of good knocks, but he's been a bit up and down. Matthew Wade, no. Not really for me. I'm not convinced by the top three. The bowling's reasonable. Rashid Khan helps that a lot. So nothing, yeah, they're not, you know, they're not all conquering by any stretch of the imagination. But like you said, the key moments this year they've nailed, and they've been they've epitomized ice cool, Iceman to Attia. Everyone's been an Iceman this year. So impressive.
Yeah, Hardik, just to nail home that point about his bowling. I didn't realise this. He didn't bowl in either of the last two IPLs. Played 14 and 12 matches, didn't bowl a single ball. So he's come back and bowled 159 deliveries. So it's about two overs a match with his lowest ever economy rate in the IPL. So you can almost add him to the list of players who have substantially overperformed expectations. You know, his batting has been a bit quieter this year, playing a slightly different role. But he scored 450 runs.
It's all right, isn't it?
At 132, so it's not. It's basically the runs they need to unleash the beasts down the order, rather than him being a beast himself. But I think he's shown quite a lot of maturity, actually, as captain, and has been pretty good in that role. It does feel to me, I haven't actually looked into this, it does feel to me like they win every single toss and always get to chase. But maybe that isn't true. I know that Sanju Sampson, and we'll go back and we'll talk about the rest of the game now, I think. Sanju Sampson has lost 13 tosses this season.
Yeah.
Which is
one more lost tosses than any other captain, though.
They needed that, didn't they?
Because they had, yeah, obviously, yeah. They had. Well,
he consistently goes heads or consistently goes tails. What's his strategy here?
maybe that's what they need. Like it's like Liverpool's throwing coach. They need a
toss analyst.
Yeah, maybe.
get Williamson on board.
Yeah, good idea.
Specialist tosser.
So if we go back through the game, we'll talk about the Rajasthan innings. They bat first, and they've got quite a lot of experience batting first, haven't they? As you get stuck in a lot if you lose 13 tosses. they get 188 for 6, and it's probably a pretty good score. I wouldn't say it was a dominant score, but I think whenever you get over 180, you're going to be in the game, aren't you? But it was a weird innings, wasn't it, Dan? And there are a couple. I mean, there's only three players, for example, score over 10.
I've met because he's got 11.
One of them does it at 180 and hits his first ball for 6 and makes it look like, you know, he's playing with his kids in the back garden. The other one who gets a lot of runs, Butler, makes it look very difficult until near the end, and then it's like his good twin gets subbed in for the last four overs for him to score some runs. Can you talk us through that from an analytical point of view? What stood out?
I mean, yeah, I'm loath to call an 89 or 56 a match losing innings, but I'm not sure it was a million miles off it. And I'm definitely not sure that the end justified the means either. because I think he was like ballpark 40 or 40. And I mean, he gets out then, that's horrendous. That is a genuine match losing innings, and it's not even close, especially on what looked like a pretty high scoring ground in these conditions. And, you know, there's always a danger of that happening. Like, I remember like 2 or 3 years ago when we were doing these pods, I would say, oh, you know what, yeah, Kohli, he can't score 20 off 20 and then look to accelerate, because what happens if you get out scoring 20 off 20? And people in the chat were going, but he never does, he never does, he never does. Well, actually, this season has shown, actually, he does quite a lot. And over the last couple of years, actually, that's probably proven to be the case. So that is the risk that you take. And there's arguments, I mean, not necessarily with the Rajasthan batting order, where maybe he has to be a bit more cautious because you've got Parag at 6 and Ashwin at 7. But there's an argument that if your batting is a bit deeper, you're actually kind of ruining your team's chances by playing those type of innings rather than helping them. Still think it's extremely high risk. Certainly, if he's going to play like that, then England definitely don't need to play Dawid Malan in the same team. I prefer like more of a swashbuckling Butler. He's twin, if you like, as you say, Chad.
Well, we were talking about this. So Butler coming into this season, so looking at IPL data, excluding this year, his 10-ball strike rate, so first 10 balls, what does he do with him? 137, which is probably elite, you know, if we're being honest here. He bats in the power play, so he gets a little bit of a boost there over... you know, maybe somebody who comes in the death. Another player who slowed down quite a lot on that respect, actually, on the other side, Hardik Pandya, I think it was in the 150s, his 10-ball strike rate, and that definitely won't be the case this season. But Butler this year, it's much, much lower. It's much more like King Legends. And I think he has actually talked about how he feels he has the ability to catch up. And look, that... can work, but if you play that way, you're always going to be in a battle with yourself, basically, whereby you need to very regularly be very good after you've faced 20 balls in order to be a plus value player.
Put yourself in that position?
Well, exactly.
That's the thing, isn't it?
If we say here that 25 of 25 is probably a minus five, let's say it's a minus five runs innings for your team if you're opening the batting. We can debate back and forth whether it's minus five, but for the sake of this thought exercise, if you decide you're going to get to be 25 or 25 every innings and you're going to be very consistent at that, then you've got minus five runs to catch up on before you're back to even. So you probably need to get to 50 off the next 10 balls if you're going to catch up to be in a sort of an average position by the time you get to 50. If we say 50 off 35 is about average, maybe slightly above average, and then to make it a good innings, extrapolate that out further. You need to be really consistently pumping out runs very quickly after you get to that 25 off 25 situation. The day it was worse, 40 or 40s, like you're so far behind the eight ball there that even if you do absolutely batter the bowling like he does at the end, you're in a situation where we're looking at the scorecard and we're saying, was that really a great innings for this team? Now, probably the answer is yes. I mean, probably it is a plus value innings. But for most of the time he was out there, it wasn't. Which is not only a risk for your own personal stats, but everyone batting at the other end don't know that later on you're going to finish 88 or 54. They don't have a crystal ball. All they know is that they have a very limited number of balls left now and not a very good score on the board, which has to affect their way of batting. Max, is that, do you get where I'm coming from there? Do you get how it puts pressure on other players?
Yeah, spot on. It was really curious from Josh Butler, but I think what we saw, like you said, his ability to catch up, we did see that. And it looks like it was a conscious decision. He didn't hit a six until, what, the penultimate over, I think, in the end. He'd hit 12 fours before he'd hit a six. It was that was curious. He didn't try to hit a six. He was very content with playing it along the ground, content with nurdling ones and twos. And when he was playing along the ground, he was timing it quite nicely. I don't think it was necessary that he was... struggling hugely. I think he was struggling against the spinners. He certainly couldn't play Rashid Khan. They'd certainly just went for the let's see off Rashid Khan approach, which is not necessarily a bad thing because he was bowling very nicely today. But like you say, the problem is when you have to do that catching up, you feel like you've probably left some runs out there. You might have left 10 runs out there by going late.
I think he probably has.
Yeah, and that's made it that's made it difficult. It's very strange to sit and criticize someone who scored 89 runs or 56 balls, and you know, you look at it in terms of the scorecard and it's a good score. But you could see it was the 17th over, whenever it was, that Yash Dayal came back on. There was an instant change in approach from Joss Butler, and you could tell it was a case of he decided he was going to see it through the middle overs, and when it gets to the death, but he's going to go for it. And he's in the enviable position of being a man who has the ability to do that, to flick a switch and then just start playing a completely different kind of innings. And that is one of the hardest things to do as a cricketer. It was a very impressive thing that he did. But like you say, why would you put yourself in a position where you are catching up? Because the flip side of that is you are consciously putting yourself behind. And it caused him a problem. Like I say, Shimon Hetmeyer didn't have time to set himself at all and get in. He wasn't very good. It was a bit odd, but
yeah.
Even then, 188. It was a decent score to end up on, and you were sort of looking at it at the end, thinking, has all the carnage in that final over from Gujarat cost them? Because we should probably talk about that that nonsense.
I want to make a point as well about the fact that this match today had a very, very, very similar dynamic to Punjab Kings versus Gujarat Titans earlier in the tournament. And there was only one difference, really, is that my Twitter notification, my phone's still hot from the notifications from that game. Punjab Kings, that game, 189 for 9 off 20 overs. And I mean, I'm going to be honest.
Was this the one where Chahal ended up scoring like 20? And
yeah, 20 or 14. Yeah. And I mean, the amount of criticism that Punjab Kings got for that game was absurd. It really was. I mean, guys, we scored 189 off 20 overs. That's good, right? We scored one more run than Rajasthan managed today. And obviously then they hit some sixes off the last over to win as well. Similar kind of match. But we got far more criticism for scoring one run more than Rajasthan did today, because like it's somehow acceptable to be 40 or 40 and accelerate and take that risk, or be like, you know, going, or even like Delhi the day before, Punjab did that, got like 145 for 4 and no one even says anything. Like, it's weird. It just shows you that the evolution of T20 cricket still has so much to do.
In fairness, well, I think maybe Graham Smith said that, did pose the question about whether they could retire the orange cap holder. he actually suggested it. I mean, I think it was a bit of a joke, as you know, obviously Ashwin was in the locker, wasn't he? And he played quite well the other night. So I think it was said in jest. But at least one person in the commentary box was aware at that point in time that it wasn't a good
idea. It wasn't ideal.
Yeah. Speaking of Ashwin, I liked, and we can talk about a little bit more about the last over, but the last ball, Butler's run out, diving to try and get back in for what he thinks is a two off the last delivery. Yeah. Ashwin then faces the last ball, leaves a wide. Rian Parag like does the right thing. He runs down the other end to get himself on strike for you know, what will be the last ball, or if it is actually the last ball of the innings, to try and nick a single. And Ashwin just stands in the crease and runs him out.
That was the second worst run out of the day.
I thought Ashwin, he has one good innings, then he thinks he's Brian Lara. I tell you. Max,
that seems par for the course.
Max, what else in that over did you entertain you? Stuck well, in your it memory.
Was well the free hit from the final ball, of course, was funny. Then Joss Butler, yeah, getting run out. The wide following that, the run out that ensued with Rian Parag, that was largely it. But you know, it was 184 for 5 was the end. That was the end that should have been. And then it ended up on 188 somehow. in bizarre circumstances. And you just had a feeling, didn't you, that maybe that was going to make a bit of a difference. So it didn't turn out that way because Killer Miller killed it. But
it was good, Killer Miller.
It was just some good circus cricket.
I'm worried that we haven't said enough good things about Killer Miller, but he was good. And Sanju Samson as well played a pretty fun innings. I've enjoyed watching him back this year. I really
enjoyed that you said on our show the other day, Jack, when he was like, you just feel every time Sanju Samson goes in the bat, he's going to hit his first ball for six.
But then he did.
And he did.
I cannot believe he's not been picked for India. Is that what you expect me to say? Yeah. I can't see what he would have to like, and they've rested players as well. Some of the people they appear to think are better than Sanju Samson is I actually can't articulate how stupid you have to be to
they have like a weighted Basra system where like the average is like counts for 10 times what your strike rate is that like a criteria for select?
It is a bit like that. It's him, and if you're going to play a sort of slightly rotated team, why are you not having at least having a look at him and Tripathi, the other one? It's odd, but you know, Dravid knows best. I can't. It's going to be so weird, isn't it? At the World Cup, I always think this was sort of India. The World Cup will come around in October, and it will be like King Legend, Rohit,
Ashwin,
no, Kohli. And then I don't know who else after that. I mean, probably they'll probably
Skye if he's fit.
Well, maybe Skye. They'll probably bat Skye at five, yeah, and Rishabh Pant at four, and you'll be like, what is this team? Like, why?
If they do that, they haven't learned their lesson from the last World Cup.
I fully expect them to not have learned that lesson. I can't see Kohli agreeing to be rested for the series that's coming up. If there was any chance that he would,
well, I know he's back now, so
if he would miss the World Cup, I think they must have said to him and Rohit, "You're going to be playing. You're going to be back where you want." So you know, don't have a beach holiday. And I guess if you've already decided on that, then why even bother having a look at Sanju Samson? Because if he turns out to be quite good, then you've got to have a difficult conversation, haven't you? And the whole selection process seems to be based around not having those difficult conversations. We digress slightly. We've got a couple of super chats in, which I think are quite fun questions, both from Sudeep. If all the teams played a 100 match season, who would be your top four ranks? Dan, you could exclude Punjab, but we'll all exclude Punjab from the tournament. Do you remember when we did this in a circle and Max, you got it wrong and you went in the wrong order? You will nominate one team each and we'll do the top four. So Dan, you can nominate the first and the fourth team. Max, you can nominate the second and I'll nominate the third.
Right.
So Dan, who 100 team season of the 9 teams that aren't the Punjab Kings, who do you think is best or definitely going to qualify?
Do you know what? I'm not even sure. I wouldn't want to put my name to any of the teams. I think they're all very, very, very similar in quality. I just think that maybe a couple of the teams who are at the bottom are
worse.
They just made it. Well, no, they're not worse, but they've made bad decisions. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'll go with RCB, but I don't like it too much.
I'd have had RCB top.
I'd have also had RCB, yeah.
Yeah. So Wisdom of the Crowd says that RCB are best. Obviously, Kohli, we've just done him down, but really, he's amazing. So he'd be our number one. Max, who else do you think's going through?
I might have to say Delhi Capitals.
Stole my second one.
Yeah. I think
they're sort of the more well-rounded team compared to the ones who actually qualified.
So that leaves me, doesn't it? I think there are two teams, and I know who my top four would be. I'll say Rajasthan. I think that their model isn't perfect, but it will win enough to be a problem. I think that their power play bowling and their middle overs bowling is really good, and that will regularly have teams in enough strife at the death that today doesn't happen to them. And I think their batting in this IPL era where you can just rely on a couple of guys, or it seems to be that you can just rely on a couple of guys, I think it has enough. So I'm having Rajasthan. Dan, you can complete the set.
Yeah, man, this is not an unenviable task. the hipster of me wants to go to Mumbai. The Tim David Mumbai, maybe. But the problem is they're going to be a year older. Some of the players are going to be older in a 100-game tournament. So,
if they're lucky, Pollard will have retired.
Well, yeah. I'm going to go Lucknow.
Lucknow, okay. Yeah, that was the other team I was thinking of. Similar reasons to why I said Rajasthan. Although, I mean, like, we were talking about this yesterday? Was it yesterday, Max? How many runs the three best batters on their team have scored versus everyone else? It's like 1,400 to 800 or something like that. And that doesn't even include extras, so it's actually probably more like 1,400, 700 off the bat, which is pretty jokes, but I guess it's working. Seems to be a thing that you can do now. And the other question from Sudeep is that, is there any value in getting set as a T20 batter? If so, how many balls? Now, I was thinking about this the other day, and I had an answer. Apparently, batters' strike rates go up for their first 15 balls of their innings. So I don't know if that means there's any value in getting set. You two can talk about that. But I do know that up to 15 balls, you generally see the next ball gets hit for more runs, if that makes sense. And then at 15, you get a plateau. Dan, any
15
value?
15 was the number that I was going to pluck from my head.
It's not quite a plateau, but it's certainly slowing down of the increase. I've actually got these numbers for the Blast because I've been working on them. Okay. Blast, first 10 balls, 125 strike rate, boundary percentage of 15.5 is average, last three seasons for all counties. Balls 11 to 20, so kind of after you face the first 10 balls, strike rate is 145 with 18.2% boundaries. And then from 21 balls or more, the average strike rate is 150 with a slightly lower boundary percentage, but a way lower dot percentage. So the intent really doesn't rise once you face 20 balls. It's you're not playing a missing, basically. You're not finding fielders.
There we go.
Yeah, although I suppose once you've been in for 20 balls, you're invariably not in the power play anymore. So
that is true. What's the question? What's the what's the value in getting set then? Is, I guess, the other part of that question.
Well, I think it's very key to really look to accelerate quickly after you face 10 balls. And if you don't do that, I mean, you look at Butler, 40 or 40 today. They have 40 or ballpark. So let's say someone is a 40 or 40. They're probably 14, 15 below par at that point. And that's a lot to catch up.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so there you go. There's those two questions answered. I think we talked a lot about today's match. Do we want to talk about tomorrow at all, or is there anything left from today that people want to cover off?
Can we just completely rag on Matthew Wade for that run out?
I think we can. I'm not sure. I think Dan might have to recuse himself. You know what actually happened?
Yeah, he's one of your boys, isn't he? I forgot about that.
That was
disgraceful behaviour.
I didn't see it. I'm going to have to do a Wenger on this.
Shipman Gill.
And if you give the accent as well.
Shipman Gill.
I didn't see it.
Shipman Gill is on strike. And he's played it into the leg side, down to deep mid wicket, in that sort of no man's land area where you look to run two. They both run the first one hard. And I think they're both got a mind to go for two because Shubman Gill has set off and turned quickly. Matthew Wade's also turned quickly, sprinted three steps down the wicket and then just stopped in his tracks and completely sold Shubman Gill out the river. It was absolutely disgraceful behaviour. It was utter shithousery from Matthew Wade. The two was there as well. If he'd carried on running, he would have just made it and they'd have got two. It was pathetic. And then he got out like three balls later doing nothing. So he's probably the most relieved man in Gujarat right now. Well, Kolkata.
I'll tell you what, he's having a hell of a year, isn't he, Matt Wade? He's won the World Cup.
Yeah.
He could win the IPL. He's been signed by the Birmingham Phoenix. It doesn't get better than that. Yeah, he could. Oh, well, yeah, there's a good chance. There's a really good chance there. Should we talk about tomorrow 5 minutes? We never really do long previews, and then we'll do the questions. We've got some quite good questions.
I just had to get Dan's thoughts on it. I think we covered it a little bit, didn't we, in our last show.
But... yeah, I've actually forgotten who I predicted. I don't know if this happens to it probably doesn't happen to you, Dan, because you don't make a show about making public predictions. But when I do make a prediction, people like dredge it up from 6 months ago, being like, "Look, you were wrong about this." Yeah.
Don't worry, guys. If you're listening in the chat and you're in the chat, just so you know, every single podcast that I do with you guys, I read the chat. So I'm fully aware that I'm getting slated for being bald, and I'm fully aware that you will dredge up stuff from.
That's actually a protected sexual characteristic now, you know.
Is it?
Yeah, I know. I heard about a court case for that.
Yeah.
It's almost made as much news as Adrian Charles's urine.
At least it has a lid.
What I was going to say. It's that I made a prediction about this game yesterday, and I've already forgotten who I predicted would win.
You went for RCB. You went for RCB, Jack. And,
I put that much thought into them.
Yeah, you went for RCB, and I went for Lucknow to be contrary, but I also think RCB will win.
Well, I thought RCB, I still think they're the most well put together team in the tournament. In matches, they sometimes blow up. They're not without weaknesses, are they? But I think they're better than luck now. Dan, where would you put your hypothetical money?
Coley's back, isn't he?
Coley's back. Well,
yeah. Coley's back, mate.
In all seriousness, Hasaranga factor, Maxwell match winner. Bit of solidity, you know, you're going to get some runs from Faf and Coley. Decent. Yeah. Is Harshal Patel injured, or is that is?
I think he's. I think he's, I haven't heard that.
He only bowled the one over in the.
He's bit of webbing in his hand. I saw.
Yeah.
Quite nasty. So that would be a blow if he was out. But yeah, I lean towards RCB. I think.
It looks. I've just googled that actually. Harshal Patel. It doesn't look like he is going to be out. It seems like he will be. Okay, but you never really know. There's not.
No, it's hard to find. It's always very funny.
Well, it's not only that, but like, I feel like in the Premier League and in football in general, you know, managers do a presser before and after every match, and all of this stuff just gets asked, and then they say the truth mostly. It doesn't feel like that. What you get after IPL matches is just like the man of the match has to answer some questions, and they haven't been like talking to the medical team or, thinking about what's going to happen in the next match. They're just like happy they won a car or whatever you get for winning. So you never get any actual info, do you? And the most of the social media stuff is about brand promotion rather than information. So more press conferences in the IPL, more stuff for us to watch.
And yeah, you can sponsor the press conferences as well. So you could. That's more reason to get them in.
Thank you to ComN22 in the chat on YouTube. That is nice of you. They sent us a super chat, which is
thank
cool.
You very much.
Any key battles tomorrow that you'd highlight, Dan, if you were looking at those two teams?
Yeah, Hasaranga against everybody. Maxwell against the Lucknow Paces. It's probably a key battle as well.
Maxwell de Kock.
Yeah, de Kock will need to see off Maxwell if he opens the bowling, for example. Those are some keys. I think the game's going to be probably won or lost. I think it'll be a tight game. If Harshal Patel's injured, definitely tip that in favour of RCB being a premium quality death bowler as well. They've got Dinesh Kartik, who's been a great hitter at the death for RCB as well. So there's, I feel like in a tight moment, maybe they've got the edge in those key battles. I think they've got the edge. Avesh Khan, probably the best bowler for Lucknow, although he struggled in the last game, I think. Bishnoi probably hasn't had the best season compared to last year. And the other question is whether Mohsin Khan can somehow sustain this unbelievable level that he's been at as well. I look at his numbers in the SMAT where he wasn't even a regular, and I'm thinking, how on earth has he done this? like literally, like, this is the most random run of form of all time. And yeah, you know, I don't know what the criteria is for newcomer of the season, but he's got to have that locked, right?
Yeah. So we're all sort of saying RCB, which is perfect, isn't it? Because that's the exact RCB narrative that means that they will now blow up and make all their fans sad, which happens every year. So I look forward to...
It'll be funny to see Angry Coley.
To watching that from a beach in Sicily tomorrow afternoon. I've got to find a VPN for my phone so I can I can sit on a sun lounger and do that. Yeah. I don't know if my girlfriend will be that impressed. 4 hours of IPL in that.
But well, you've got to watch the football on Sunday as well.
I will try my best. There's a wedding that I'm supposed to be at.
Oh, no. So, you're going to be one of them guests.
Except it'll be in Italy. So people are like, what on earth are you doing?
Don't forget, you've got to watch Sky on Saturday for Leicester v Derbyshire as well.
Going to questions, and we'll run through these quite quickly. What time are we up to? 44 minutes. So we'll try. We want to keep these under an hour if possible. But we had a question that sort of leads on quite nicely from the Mohsin Khan point, Dan. This comes from Ankit. Does a good eye of a coach still have a place in today's environment? So, I don't know. Max, I'll ask you this to you. Is it possible that... Is it Naira at LSG, or is he at Gujarat? I think is it's... It? Oh, well, okay. It's the England guy. Yeah, Andy Flower. Did Andy Flower just see him in the nets and know that Mohsin Khan would be good? Is that something that's plausible?
I think it is plausible. There's certainly a place for having a good eye, but the question is whether you can combine that with other sources of information. There's no, you can't go all down one route, I don't think. I think
you otherwise, you have a team of James Vinces.
Well, exactly. You know, but there's certainly a place for giving someone a go based on them looking good, and then you try them out. And if it doesn't bear fruit because you know the stats say they're terrible, then you get rid of them. But that's not happened. They've had a look at him and the stats are pretty good. So carry on. I think there's there's more than one way to skin a cat, basically, is what I'm trying to say. It's just when you think you've got a good eye and you spotted something and then you persevere with it against all available evidence, that's when you have to start questioning the sanity of people. But so far it looks like a great find.
I could probably do a whole podcast on this. The question actually reminded me of a conversation I had at the swim pool at the T10 with an unnamed player and an unnamed coach who were absolutely convinced that their eye was better than anything that could possibly exist in cricket to find talent anywhere else. And that they've never got a player wrong ever in their whole lives. And what I tend to see happen a lot is that a coach is delighted to take credit for the gems that he finds and not so willing to take accountability for the flops. And that's often a narrative that's generated by the media as well. I actually think that kind of a combinatory approach is better, where you have maybe like an analyst recommending a number of players and the coach then does their own due diligence and you come up with a player who kind of ticks both boxes. That would work for me. If you're saying, okay, data or eye, and you can only choose one, I'm 100% going with data. And that's not because I'm involved with that, it's because I've seen that it's far more powerful than a coach's eye generally over than my experience over the last four or five years.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with that as well. I'd looked into this with the England Test team, and you can there are some things you can sort of define with data. Like, you know, it's very rare that a player wildly exceeds certain metrics. if you track them moving between, say, county cricket and test cricket, and I imagine that's very similar for the IPL. Where that might be, where there's a, it's slightly harder, or it looks like it's slightly harder anyway, is when a player is quite young. So Mohsin Khan is only 23. Like, it is plausible, bearing in mind we've had sort of two quite severely disrupted years because of COVID, that he's been doing loads of practice and actually, like, hasn't got the game time because of some stupid seniority thing at the SMAT level. And actually, he is this good. And all he needed to do was get in front of somebody who could recognise that, and they'd put him in the team, and then he'd be good. So there, you know, it's sort of a combo thing. Yeah, I'd agree with that, and that's the environment you want to create, right?
Mm-hmm.
More Twitter. Nick George, it's a five bowler strategy that Rajasthan Royals employs. Is it feasible or is it unfeasible in the long run, Dan?
I think we kind of covered that already, and I don't think it is. We've seen that there's quite a big standard deviation for their paces in the past, and we talked about that on a previous pod during this year's tournament. And yeah, I don't like it because you can't necessarily take advantage of specific matchups. You have an issue with the inflexible death bowling, for example, as well. Where,
well, the other thing, just at a very basic level, is what if someone gets injured and you have to bowl Ryan Parag for three overs? Yeah. It's not ideal, is it?
No, not at all. And they're forced to bowl a guy who doesn't have much deviation in his pace as a death bowler. Yeah, I'm not massively sold on it. What I prefer from like a recruitment point of view is to have several top six batters who are at least good enough to be matchup bowlers. So that's something that I put a lot of value in. So I put Phoenix. We've got Mo. We've got Livy. That's covers those options, and you end up getting seven bowlers. And you don't have to use the top six batters as bowlers, but they're often really useful in a lot of situations, and they can combine to be a sixth bowler or whatever you need them to be. Sometimes they bowl four quarters, and that's a key thing for me. RR don't really have that. I certainly don't see Parag as a sixth bowler. So maybe he might be in the future, but he's not right now, I don't think. It's probably not sustainable long term.
Okay. We've got a couple more questions that I think would be good. The first one is from Antarikish. Now, Max, I'm going to ask you this. Well, you can start your thought. We'll have your thoughts first on this one. What are some good trades teams could do?
Interesting. That's a very, very tough one to answer off the top of your head, isn't it? Punjab could maybe try and get
here
hold
you go
of,
Dan take note
yeah could see if they could do a little trade for Gujarat, maybe give them someone someone that they need. And get back someone that they could. I don't know. Maybe Alzari Joseph or Lucky Ferguson, for example. They've got both of those. Only one normally plays. Maybe there's a gap that Gujarat need to fill that Punjab could give them. I don't know.
That's, there you go, Dan.
There's an option. I'm just trying to play with you, Dan.
I love the idea of trades generally as a general concept. I think it's really underdone in.
Yeah, I like it as well. I think almost because the seasons are so short that there's not necessarily the incentive to trade if the team that you think you've recruited is quite good, because you never really find out for sure over 14 mm-hmm. matches whether your team's good or not. And if you're bad, then what have you got to trade really? Like, just bad stuff, and the good teams aren't going to want that. So I think there are a few things that limit it. I think if it were a 25 match season, then you'd see a little bit more of it. And I don't know like what they'll do in the future, but if they move towards a draft system or something like that, and you could trade draft picks halfway through the years, then if you were Sunrisers, had an average, and this is what happens in the NFL, you could trade, I don't know, Tripathi for the first pick next year and pick up Jadeja when CSK release him. That'd be a lot of fun. But like at the moment, it doesn't.
Deadline day would be amazing, wouldn't it? IPL deadline day. You get Tom Moody driving out of the Sunrise Stadium and window of his Range Rover, like Harry Redknapp does, giving an interview through the window.
It would be good. Yeah, I think. Well, you have a trade deadline in baseball, and that works quite well. But then you also have like huge farm systems in baseball. So like not only do you have your major league team, but you have 100 other players that are prospects of some level or another that you can use as capital. So if you're having a good year and you need like one extra player to get to the playoffs, then you can sell one of your prospects for another team's best player, but the other, you know, in a situation where the other team aren't likely to make the playoffs, because the IPL season is so short and teams are in it for so long, there's no point at which you necessarily think about doing that, and also you just don't have the capital to make the trade. So the only time that a trade makes sense is if I don't know, like in a hypothetical situation where Gujarat did want to get rid of one of their fast bowlers for maybe an opening batter. Maybe there is a team out there with three opening batters. Maybe Rajasthan actually would like to get rid of Devdutt Padikkal and swap Devdutt Padikkal for Alzarri Joseph or something like that. That's the only time it really makes sense. And again, because the seasons are quite short, and you know, the overseas availability comes and goes.
Yeah.
It never quite makes sense. But I'd like to see more of it. Mm. I think we might just make that the last question. Actually, it was quite an interesting one to ask. Any final words from you, Dan?
No, I'm good. Looking forward to the rest of the comp. Looking forward to the blasts. Been a long tournament, I think. It was long.
It is quite long, isn't it? It's going to be longer next year, isn't it? It's going to be 95 matches or something next year.
Rival the Big Bash.
Yeah.
The blast team that Surrey could potentially put out, I was looking at this the other day, is absolutely disgusting.
Is it good?
It's so good.
Well, who could they play? You can tell us about the Surrey team and then we'll finish up.
Will Jacks, Jason Roy. Who else you got in there? You've got Pope, Curran, Folks. Obviously, Pope and Folks won't be there. But Pollard, Narine. Assuming this Pollard's not the shit Pollard. You've got both the Currans. Reece Topsley.
Big assumption.
Yeah. it was there's
Daniel
ridiculous.
Moriarty.
Daniel Moriarty, yeah. He might, you know, will probably come in with some of the players not around. I'm definitely missing a couple here. Yeah, maybe not. Laurie Evans, that was it.
Yeah, Laurie Evans is gonna keep, I think. I've heard this.
And Chris Jordan.
Okay. Yeah, I mean the chances of you getting all those players on the pitch at the same time is like,
it's slim.
It's the same chance as me scoring 100 not out on finals day.
But there's fun there. There's definitely fun to be had.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, even if you have seven of those guys and four guys you just pop off the streets, it's probably still going to be good enough to.
I wonder if anyone, like, I mean, surely this must have happened. Like, not necessarily in your role, but with agents, has ever managed to blag their way into a proper team.
Ali Dia style.
Ali Dia, yeah.
Yeah, and then actually done okay.
Yeah, the house.
Right, I was going to say it's Arjun Tendulkar, but he's not played in any way.
No, there is a true story about this, actually. If you Google it, and actually some guy who did a series of articles about it last season, there was a guy called Adrian Shankar who played for Worcester in 10 plus years ago. If you Google that, the story is incredible. If it's true, that story is like better than Ali Dia's story.
I've played a few matches, Anyway, we're going to wrap up the podcast now. Thank you very much for watching and listening. I've realised that everyone here forgot to record it, so we'll have to rip it off YouTube. It's been a while since we've had to do that, but
never mind. Yeah.
All right. Cheers, everyone. Bye bye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
In my dentist's office.
More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.